Mics are live.
Good morning. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is 10:03 on Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis. Also present with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak.
I don't have opening comments either.
Commissioner Christman?
Just will point out that expecting NARUC President Nick Wagner to come and visit us in North Dakota today. So as some of you recall, we had a NARUC chairman a few years ago from North Dakota when Tony Clark was here. And Nick Wagner has been a good commissioner in Iowa for I don't know how many years, but is currently the NARUC chairman and is kind of circling through the states. And hopefully we'll see him here this afternoon sometime.
All right. Thank you. We have three items on consent in the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. I have one item on the regular agenda. I move the commission adopt the order of Northern States Power Company fuel clause adjustment variance approval. Case number PU-19-172.
Second.
On May 6, 2019, Northern States Power requested a variance to the fuel cost adjustment rider in order to pass on to customers through the fuel cost rider a financial settlement from General Electric related to a turbine failure at NSP's Sherco 3 generator. This variance is requested under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-01-11 and 69-09-02-39. On May 29th, the Commission did issue a Notice of Opportunity for Hearing, which provided until July 8th, 2019, for receiving written comments and hearing requests. No response was received. And on July 25th, the commission discussed the matter with NSP and advocacy staff, commission advocacy staff, during an informal hearing. This goes back to an incident that happened in November 2011 at NSP's Sherco Generating Unit Number 3. They experienced a turbine failure due to stress corrosion cracking that resulted from a design flaw. The resulting lawsuit was settled with GE and for a confidential amount of money on September 20th, 2018. NSP proposes to pass through the entire settlement amount in its entirety to its electric service customers. The commission finds the proposed pass-through amount is just and reasonable if this order is approved. The replacement energy when the turbine was out was purchased by the company, and that was billed through the fuel cost recovery rider. Therefore, the commission finds the fuel cost rider is also an appropriate mechanism for crediting the settlement payment to customers, and NSP's requested fuel cost rider variance should be granted. The refund itself would be received by customers within 45 days of approval of the order. And the settlement itself was confidential. It's trade secret information in terms of the amounts received. So I can't provide any specific numbers as a result, but customers will see the amount reflected in their bill again within 45 days. And that's not common or uncommon, I should say, in a settlement agreement like this. But NSP worked hard at getting an appropriate settlement amount, a fair amount, and then I think it's also appropriate it's passed on to customers.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and that completes my agenda items. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hold over JF1, if that's all right with everybody.
It's okay.
I want to talk to staff a little bit more about a couple wordings in that notice of opportunity for a hearing. So I'd move on to JF2. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Belfouche Pipeline Company 8-inch Wilson Bowline Pipeline Conversion Project Siting Application, case number PU-18-404.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. On December 17th of 2018, Belfouche Pipeline Company filed with us a combined application for a Certificate of Corridor Compatibility and Route Permit concerning the location of an existing 8-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County, North Dakota, that had been converted from a gathering line to a transmission line. On June 11th of 2019, the hearing was held as scheduled, and in Watford City, the pipeline consists of approximately 20 miles of 8-inch diameter steel pipeline located in McKenzie County. The pipeline is capable of transporting 43,200 barrels of crude oil per day. There is a 4-mile pipeline segment from Bowline Junction to Red Wing Creek, which was constructed in 1978. The remaining pipeline segment from Red Wing Creek to Wilson Station was constructed in 2012. In 2017, Belfouche constructed the Kermit to Wilson gathering pipeline that gathers crude oil upstream from the Wilson Station. So essentially, this is a pretty extensive gathering line system that the pipeline was originally operated as a gathering system, but it's currently operating as a transmission line. No new construction is required in this application. The cost of the system in 2018 dollars is approximately $16 million. In going through the conversion, Belfouche conducted studies and surveys and did not record any exclusion areas within the survey area. They consulted with all the various federal, state, and local agencies, and a number of them provided feedback. A designated or registered national grasslands are an avoidance area. The pipeline has an existing easement obtained from U.S. Fish and Wildlife and through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife grasslands, national grasslands. The pipeline is not anticipated to have any adverse effects, and conversion of the existing pipeline will minimize impacts that would otherwise be associated with construction of a new pipeline. Belfouche, the North Dakota Geological Survey, also provided some input to this application, and Belfouche testified it will conduct geotechnical evaluations for the three areas that NDGS identified and will file copies with the commission. Belfouche testified it identified two structures within 500 feet of the pipeline route. Those areas are avoidance areas. And they have obtained waivers from both landowners in those areas. On January 22nd, North Dakota State Historic Preservation Officer issued a no historic properties affected concurrence. Belfouche testified that wetlands and streams were bored for the pipeline that was constructed in 2012. No other wetlands or water bodies were permanently drained or filled as part of the conversion. Belfouche also testified that during field surveys, no reclamation issues from prior construction were noted. Belfouche testified it regularly inspects the pipeline, including close interval cathodic protection surveys and bimonthly aerial patrols. It was hydrostatically tested and is under cathodic protection to prevent corrosion. And Belfouche uses pipeline inspection gauges to internally inspect the pipeline at regular intervals. The pipeline will be under a SCADA system that monitors the pipeline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year by trained professionals. And the system monitors the flow and pressure of the system and allows Belfouche to identify and respond to situations outside of normal operating conditions. One of the biggest issues on this conversion was the health department came and testified with some concerns relating to this company's previous spill history. And we had a pretty good dialogue back and forth with the health department, the company, and our staff regarding the health department's concerns. And ultimately, we determined that the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration is conducting an audit of Belfouche's SCADA and leak detection systems. All of its protocols, processes, data calculation and presentation, control room management procedures, and training. And that audit is still taking place, and the health department was comfortable that that audit was going to address all of the concerns that it had. And so they were okay with this permit moving forward under the conditions that the audit findings would be shared and that the company would be addressing issues in the audit findings. So they basically testified, the health department in the end, that the PHMSA audit is expected to address the concerns it raised over the company's inability to detect and prevent oil spills in a timely manner. Let's see here. They will file that audit with us when it's completed. They will also conduct a study to evaluate the depth of the entire length of the pipeline, and we'll file that copy with the commission as well. They will be filing the geotechnical evaluations of the three potential slope instability areas identified by the North Dakota Geological Survey. And they will file those with us for review and consideration for potential mitigation, if any, is warranted. So with that, I think this order is ready to go. You know, these conversions are always a little bit tricky because the pipelines are in the ground. It makes sense for the companies to use that infrastructure to maximize its potential to minimize additional new construction that's needed to safely transport the product that's being produced in Western North Dakota. In this case, the company did have conversations with staff a number of months ago, maybe up to 2 years ago now, about this conversion process and kind of was walked through what was necessary to convert the pipeline. And so I appreciate that they were proactive in doing that. However, they should have acted in a more timely manner and actually gone through that regulatory process before the conversion actually occurred in the field. And so it isn't going to impact this particular order, but it is one thing that I want to make noted for future, you know, companies to the conversion process needs to happen first, and then it can be used as a transmission line. There are some differences, not so many operational differences, but there are one of the big differences between a transmission line and a gathering line is the setback from occupied residences. And so those need to be waived if they're within 500 feet prior to converting them to a transmission line. And they were in this case. They did get the waivers. So it'll be up to staff whether they pursue this issue any further with the company. I mean, they will be compliant. They will become into compliance now with this order. And that's the most important thing. But if staff chooses to have conversations with the company about that delay, that may be forthcoming. And so that's really separate from this siting permit. But otherwise, I think that's everything in this issue. And I think that there was a lot of good work done on this and a lot of great conversations had with the company on their safety protocols and things that they've changed since some of their previous spills. We had lengthy conversations about that at the hearing and about what caused some of those spills and what they've done to prevent them. And I'm quite comfortable that Belfouche is probably going to be on the cutting edge of some of the best systems that are developed for monitoring these kinds of lines that have multiple on-off components, because they've really taken the bull by the horns and are developing some new technology that they intend to deploy on their systems that should make them some of the safest in the industry. So I think that I look forward to that new system becoming a reality and appreciate the good conversations we had with the company about where they went wrong in the past and how they're going to be better in the future.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would like to add one thing, and first of all, I think you explained it very well, and I agree with pretty much everything you said, but just to add one more point, and speaking for just myself, because I don't think we've really discussed this in detail. The seventh point in the order, and you highlighted it, that the conversion parts, they need to do a study and check the depth of those converted miles of pipeline and come up with a mitigation plan if there are areas that aren't as deep as they ought to be. And in most cases, except under roads, that's 48 inches. I think I could imagine scenarios where the correct plan might be to not do anything. And an example of what I'm thinking of is if the pipeline is out in a pasture and it's exposed or almost exposed, yeah, that would, I think, be unacceptable. But if there's been a great reclamation success and you got really good grass cover, but the pipe is 47 inches instead of 48 inches, perhaps the best thing is to just monitor that in the future to make sure it's not lifting and leave it to and not tear everything back up over a trivial amount. So I hope that's the way this is taken, that any instances that are found where something is not in perfect compliance will be evaluated thoroughly before a decision is made what to do about it.
Any further discussion?
I would, you know, and I've, whether it's this pipeline or other pipelines, operating in the state, lessons learned are only effective when proper controls are put in place. And the burden of responsibility falls on the company or other operators, whether it's in the oil patch or any type of transmission facility in the state. So the public expects and should expect a zero spill tolerance from regulatory bodies, and I would echo Commissioner Fedorchak. I think the company has put forth a very good plan, but they also have to follow through on that plan. That's critical because we certainly don't want to be reading about any type of failure in the future for this facility or others. So a zero spill mentality is critical moving forward.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Christman.
RC1, I move the commission approve the revised decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed on July 12, 2019 in Otter Tail Power Company, 40.5 megawatt Langdon Wind in Cavalier County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-09-244, and the revised decommissioning plan and cost estimate filed also on July 12, 2019 in Otter Tail Power Company 48 megawatt Ashtabula Wind in Barnes County, decommissioning plan and cost, case number PU-09-245.
Second.
On June 12th of this year, the Commission held an informal hearing with Otter Tail Power regarding their wind decommissioning plans, cost estimates, and financial assurances for the Langdon Wind and Ashtabula Wind facilities. The last plans for the two facilities were filed on January 11th of this year. In that update, the decommissioning estimates for each facility is $125,000 per wind turbine. I want to emphasize, when we divide these down per wind turbine, that is not the cost necessarily for each wind turbine. That's the cost for all the wind turbines, roads, other infrastructure that needs to be removed, and then the total cost divided by the number of turbines. So But so they came up with that about $125,000 per turbine figure, but that included salvage value and excluded the cost of hauling it away. After the June 12th informal hearing, the commission provided Otter Tail with additional guidance. So on July 12th, the first one was June 12th, this is July 12th now, Otter Tail filed revisions to its decommissioning plans and cost estimates to address our concerns. Their revised estimates exclude salvage value and include additional costs associated with treating the facilities as a waste liability, including costs for hauling the scrap to a disposal site. The effect was a net increase of $97,000 per turbine or $222,000 per turbine total. Otter Tail also included language that the commission must approve any landowner request to leave access roads in place. On August 29th, staff had a conversion with an Otter Tail representative who agreed that Otter Tail would file the self-guarantees for each facility. This is strictly on the decommissioning plan and the cost estimate.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I think this decommissioning is really vital work that's being done by the commission, and I want to give kudos to Randy for really spearheading it. Just yesterday I heard on the radio, I think it was Prairie Public Radio, a story about how difficult the blades are going to be to dispose of. And they're built to last. They're tough to break down. Not a lot of disposal sites currently take them. And there is a lot of wind generation being developed all over this country. So this is a big issue we have to be thinking about. This commission has been thinking about it for a good number of years already. And I expect that we will continue to work with the companies, continue to look at their best estimates moving forward for how much it costs to be prepared to pay for this when the time comes, and make sure that there are resources in place to do it and to do it well. The disposal alone, you see, was $125,000 per turbine, up to $220,000 per turbine. When you start looking at transporting all of these pieces to a disposal site, we don't even know where those disposal sites are going to be. Right now, I don't think there are any in North Dakota that currently take them, but we anticipate that they will down the road. And so it's not a perfect science. We're doing the best with the information we have today, and it's something that we will be in close conversation with companies moving forward. Every 5 years or so, I anticipate we'll be having these conversations with companies to discuss what the latest is on estimates for the cost of taking that. Maybe it'll become less. Maybe there'll be more recycling available or reuse. I hope that's the case. But it is something that is kind of an X factor right now and unknown. We're working hard to minimize the unknowns and be properly prepared.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, I'll touch on that and then a couple other points. There are a number of variables that we do have to take into account, or will have to take into account as we move forward into the future. But I would also echo the same thing in terms of this program. The decommissioning plan requirement is a great first step. It's going to be ever evolving and changing as we learn more. And the blades are an issue in terms of fiberglass blades potentially can be used as a fuel source. I believe I talked about this a little yesterday during an informal hearing that doing some research online that Germany, I believe, is looking at fiberglass blades as a potential fuel source to repurpose it that way. Carbon fiber blades, on the other hand, aren't recyclable, able to be recycled currently. And that's just a reality. So it's something we'll have to monitor and keep a very close eye on, as well as where the waste goes at the end of, not the end of the life of the facility. The blades wear out first, and then the turbines will last longer. many facilities will be repowered. They could go through multiple sets of blades over the life of the facility. So it's an important issue because this is a large amount of waste that will have to be contended with. The other part that I think, you know, just begs, warrants conversation. We talk about decommissioning the facility. We talk about taking out the roads and restoring that footprint. But what happens to the transmission line if it isn't within the footprint? Because many times it extends beyond the footprint. So I think it's worth a conversation, and we have time. It's not likely that any of these facilities will be decommissioned anytime soon. I think it will be decades from now, frankly, because most will be repowered. And it only makes sense. Easements are in place. These are 99-year land easements typically. The interconnect is established, so they can push power onto the grid. And they have the footprint in place, so the majority of the cost is already accounted for. Repowering is fractionally a small portion of what the initial cost was. So we're looking forward, which is important. And then finally, the one part that really stood out to me, I believe it's 34, 35 different plans that we've received. And the range on the cost range on those facilities for decommissioning starts at $84,000 and it moves up to $339,000. So there's a significant variance in what operators are turning in terms of decommissioning. I think Otter Tail took an aggressive approach, conservative in a good way with their cost estimates. But we have other facilities that, are they too high at 339 or are they too low at 84,000? And this was round one, if you will. Staff is evaluating and reviewing now these decommissioning plans. It's going to take a lot of work, but they're taking a hard look and they'll compare notes to see what is an adequate amount that will be needed to decommission any of these facilities, because we want to make sure that if they don't operate for decades into the future, that we're prepared when that time comes, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's 10 years from now. So staff is working hard, and I think we'll have to continue the conversation on what is the appropriate amount. But I think Otter Tail did a very good job with their plan.
Is there any further discussion?
I'll just add to those points. In the 70s and even starting in the late 60s when North Dakota got ahead of the federal government and started coal mine reclamation program, I'm guessing there was a whole lot of people that thought, yeah, well, anytime in the anywhere near future, there won't be much acreage coming out of bond release on this kind of stuff. So, you know, maybe it could be put off a while. Thank goodness they started it and we don't have, you know, tens of thousands of acres now of spoil piles. So just feel good about the work of this commission in these last few years to
first in the country,
get
right?
Get this program going. Yep.
Any further discussion? Sensing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, then RC2, moving away from wind and to coal reclamation. In fact, I move the commission approve the Coteau Property Company's request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 132.9 acres of reclaimed land located in Sections 1 and 2 of Township 145 North, Range 88 West in Mercer County, where revegetation was delayed until mine roads, sedimentation ponds, and stockpiles were removed and reclaimed.
Second.
On September 6th of last year, the Coteau Properties filed a request for a variance from the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for this just under 133 acres of reclaimed land. This is at the Freedom Mine. This acreage is located in Mercer County. A variance from the 10-year revegetation responsibility period will allow these areas that were affected by roads, the sedimentation pond, and stockpiles to be bond released with the adjacent lands that were reclaimed between 1995 and 2010. It's anticipated that Coteau will submit the bond release for these tracks later this year or early next year. The 133-acre variance request area includes 30.7 acres in Section 1 and 102.2 acres in Section 2 of that township. The 31 acres in Section 1 consists of 29.4 acres, so almost all of it, of reclaimed native grassland, and then 1.3 acres of county road that will be attached to 216 acres of reclaimed native grassland and 7.7 acres of road, respectively. These variance areas were reclaimed in 2011 and 2014 and will be attached to the adjacent lands that were reclaimed from 1995 to 2002, making much nicer blocks of land to ultimately be released here. The variance request area will consist of approximately 12% of the entire reclamation tract there in Section 1. The 102-acre variance request area in Section 2 consists of almost 98 acres of native grasslands, again, it's almost all native species grasses, plus a 2.5-acre wetland, a 0.6-acre stock pond, and 1.5 acres of county road. The 97.6 acres of native grassland will be attached to 341 acres of native grassland that was reclaimed from 1996 to 2010. The variance request area consists of approximately 23% of the whole reclamation tract in Section 2. The reclaimed and undisturbed native grassland in Section 1 and 2 together, it's all owned by Coteau and managed together, so the entire variance areas are less than 20% of the entire tract for the two sections. The native grassland variance area are established with a dense stand of perennial vegetation that is providing excellent protection from erosion. Areas seeded in 2014 and 2011 appear to be dominated with the seeded native species, which are primarily western wheatgrass, green needlegrass, switchgrass, side oats grama, blue grama, and little bluestem. The reclaimed wetland was constructed in native grassland and was not fenced to exclude cattle. Thus, that wetland provides secondary functions as a livestock water resource. A soil compaction probe was used to evaluate relative compaction at several locations in the variance request area on May 29th of this year. The results indicated that relative compaction in the variance area was not greater than adjacent older reclaimed lands. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the request and recommends approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Chrisman. For announcements, it would actually be tomorrow. On September 5th, we will be seeing a demonstration from Carbon Tech Energy Corporation on a magnetic oil sorbent demonstration to contend with spills should they occur. So that is tomorrow at 3 p.m. in Mandan, and then Monday, September 9th at 1:30, we have a periodic information exchange meeting with NSP, and that is here in the commission office. And then our next regular commission meeting is on Thursday, September 19th at 10 a.m., followed by an informal hearing that day on administrative rules public hearing. That includes pipeline safety, solar decommissioning, energy conversion facility, siting criteria, and wind decommissioning. And those are all related to rulemaking. We'll now take a brief recess and take questions from the press, followed by a short break, and then we'll begin the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.